You're listening to the Locked In Podcast. Here's your host, Algernon Cash.
I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. We are just a couple of weeks away from the May 17th primary. For those that have not been paying attention, yes, it is an election year, and it is a big election year. It's the midterm election year. And the United States Senate is up for grabs, right here in North Carolina. And we've been talking a lot about the election cycle. Early voting has already started. So I know for some of my more loyal locked in audience members, you may have already cast your vote. But many of you probably are still trying to decide who you want to support. And back on the show with me today, locking in, is former Congressman Mark Walker, also now a candidate for the United States Senate. Congressman Walker, how are you today, man?
President, I am doing great. Working hard. I think we did about 700 miles Saturday and Sunday yesterday, but can't complain. I'm having a blast meeting people. Hope that you're doing well.
I am. You were the first to declare in this race, and even came on this show pretty early on as you retired from the United States House to let us know that you are going to run for the United States Senate. I guess let's just start there. I mean, you've been out on the trail longer than anyone. I keep up with you on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You're very active on social media. I love all the pictures that come out of you and your wife, Kelly. It's always funny and a little bit of comic relief there. Just how's it been traveling across North Carolina? What have you been seeing?
I have had a blast meeting people from all walks, background, probably a little over 70,000 miles over the last year. But one of the things that I am seeing, which I, as a conservative, that I find encouraging, is I'm meeting people every single day out there from all across this state who really just wanted to work hard, raise their family, go to church, be involved in their activities, but they are coming to the political forefront. They feel like they have no other choice with inflation at 8.5%, gas where it's at, food costs out the roof. As a restaurateur yourself, I'm sure you've seen this as much as anybody has. And they said, look, we don't have a choice but to be involved, to be engaged. That's encouraging to me because I think people need to be involved in the political process. It matters who represents you in Washington, D.C. or in Raleigh.
Yeah, I think right now inflation is one of the number one, just the number one obstacles facing us. I know at the White House Correspondents' Dinner over the weekend, they were making jokes about inflation. So they all thought this was sort of funny that we're paying more at the pump, more for eggs, more for gas, more for everything you can imagine. But certainly in Washington, they do think it's pretty funny right now. I mean, if you were elected, what can you actually do about it, Congressman? I mean, how can you get in there and actually start to address some of this rise in inflationary pressure we're seeing from everything from houses to gas to food to everything you can imagine?
Sure. No, I think each member running for U.S. House or U.S. Senate should answer that question. I think if you start back, these issues don't happen overnight. I'm the last member of Congress to negotiate getting a balanced budget amendment to the floor for a House vote. The reason that's important, when you're pumping trillions of dollars into this economy, even when economists are telling you, look, the end result's not going to be good, but yet to try and earn favor in an administration that's really bottoming out when it comes to any kind of favorability or even consumer confidence, this government has to quit doing that, because the more money that you're pumping into the economy, the more that's driving up inflation. Wages are down. Small businesses can't find people or employees to come in and work. That's the number one thing that I hear across the state. Economically, everything from the stock market being down, you name it, across the board, none of the boxes are being checked. If you look at it, in the last administration, the highest inflation number we saw was about 1.7%. This is off the chain, 40 years high. And that's some of the things that we've got to do to make sure that we kind of get that spending under control, because it may get a few goodies out there, but ultimately it has a negative adverse impact on the economy.
I totally agree with you. I know that you mentioned just a moment ago at the outset of you answering that question, you said everyone who's running for the House and Senate should answer these kind of questions. I know that you and your opponent, former Governor McCrory, have been very critical about your other opponent, current Congressman Ted Budd, who has not appeared in any debates, really hasn't faced you all out in public. I know there's been a lot of chatter inside of the party itself, whether or not they believe that this is a smart strategy or exactly what Congressman Budd may be doing. But I mean, what does this say about the political electorate when you can run a campaign, not show up for debates, but still be leading in the polls, you know, well, significantly?
Sure. I think it shows you how much money it can impact in an election. You're talking about the most money ever in history for a primary, $14 to $15 million just from one special interest group in D.C. And the thing that I have a problem with at Algernon is it's dark money. Is the people that are underwriting this, they don't have to disclose their names. I have a problem with that in general. I've taken $0 of D.C. dark money, $0 of D.C. super PACs, because when I announced for Congress in 2014, I made this promise and I kept it, that I would win the Republican nomination without taking a single dollar, because the reason why is I've watched this. I've been up there 6 years. I'm the highest ranking conservative ever to serve in the top four leadership positions in the U.S. House. So I know what I'm talking about here. When you begin to take those kinds of millions of dollars, eventually that voting card that you have that you promised the people would be able, the ones that would have access to us, they don't anymore. You end up voting. Specifically, I'll give you one incident, and I'm kind of unpacking this a little bit. On the farm bill, this same special interest group called me to say vote against it. I wasn't going to vote against it. I was named as the senior negotiator from the House to the Senate side to make sure that our ag community was taken care of. My opponent had to vote against it because they called him and told him to vote against it. That's not the way our founding fathers designed this process. And for somebody who is either unable or his handlers won't let him show up to answer questions among Republicans, what are you going to do when you have to face the presumptive nominee, Sherry Beasley and Chuck Schumer? This is an interview process. We owe it to the voters to get out there and not only talk about the issues, but talk about how we defend those issues, how we lead on these issues, and talk about our record. It's very disappointing because you are correct. I'm not going to deny the fact, the numbers that I'm seeing, Mr. Budd is currently leading with kind of closing in on these 2 weeks. And it's been all basically through television ads and a commercial campaign. And I just feel like it's an injustice to the people that are trying to make an informed decision here. And I applaud Pat McCrory for showing up and answering the questions. It boggles my mind that you are telling people that you want to run for U.S. Senate, but you don't want to go tell people why.
Yeah, I tell you, I've also been a bit frustrated with the process as well. I think it, you know, no news, no breaking news to my audience that, you know, Congressman Budd and I are friends, but he has been a little reluctant to come on the show to answer any questions. I know you've been on multiple times. Governor McCrory has been on twice, just came on again a couple of weeks ago to answer some tough questions about housing and some other things related to what's happening in North Carolina. And I think my audience know me. I am a political junkie. I love the process. And I just love the political process. I think the process that we have in America is one of the greatest processes that's ever created. And I think part of campaigning is to show that you can defend your ideas, that you can defend your beliefs. And I think that a healthy electorate should demand that of any candidate. Whether you like the candidate or don't like the candidate, I mean, you should demand that they come out and show that they actually can not only have ideas, but they can defend those ideas. And I think, you know, Congressman Walker, one of the things that I've been noticing is, despite the fact, you know, again, we can go back and forth on whether or not Budd has come out to defend those ideas, but despite the fact he hasn't defended those ideas, he still has the endorsement of President Trump. He just gained the endorsement of Lieutenant Governor Robinson. I mean, it again, I sort of want to dig a little deeper. What does it say about our party and our electorate when we're throwing this much support behind someone that actually won't show up for debate?
Well, I think it's what frustrates people about politics in general. I know you're working hard in this environment to bring people into the system, be able to pay attention to calls. People engaging should matter. And it does matter. But when they look at this and they say, oh, this is how the good old boy entity operates, that you all line up behind one guy that's unwilling to even face the very basic questions to be able to talk about his 6 years in the U.S. House, what was accomplished, what was not accomplished. It's frustrating for me, especially when, I'm a pretty transparent guy. I was approached by deals. Look, if you'll do this, in fact, I'll just go ahead and tell you, I was told that for the next couple of years, we'll take care of you. We'll set you up 24, 26. All you have to do is be the surprise guest at the Donald Trump rally, come out on the stage and tell people that Ted Budd's the best candidate for the U.S. Senate. And I said, it's all basically didn't. I said, well, there's only one problem with that, is that that wouldn't be the truth. I wouldn't be running as with everything that we have if I believe that. This is not a game to me. I do it because it comes out of our heart. And they just, it just boggled their mind that that was my sticking point. And even one of them, I won't disclose at this point, maybe some point, said, look, we know that Mr. Budd's not the best candidate, but this is how the political game is being played at this point. And I'm just saying, well, count me out. And not to be too harsh, but I've just never been one that's bought into the system that says, look, if you just go along, then everything will be taken care of. That's not how I arrived to D.C. It's not how I live my life in general. I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to speak the truth. And we're going to kind of battle until the finish. And, you know, as my dad, I told, actually told one of the people that you just mentioned here, I remember what my dad said when I was offered that deal. It's never right to do wrong in order to do right. And that person hasn't texted me back since then, but we'll see what happens in the future.
Yeah, I also I've followed you for many, many years. I know that you are actually really good friends with our Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. I know you guys have shown up at a lot of different types of campaign events and so forth. I'll be honest with you, when he announced this endorsement, I guess a week or two ago, I'm not sure how long it's been. A lot of this news sort of starts to look blurry after a while. I was personally a little surprised, only because I know the relationship that you all have and the number of appearances that you all have made. And I know that you've been very supportive of him, certainly not only privately, but publicly. What was your reaction when that endorsement came out?
Well, it was disappointing. I helped Mark get his start, held his first fundraiser, and really have tried to help him along the way, even when things weren't always artfully shared on his behalf. I knew what I felt like where his heart was coming from. And it was interesting, just 2 weeks before this, we were at the largest church in Stanley County. And when he said, look, the only person that was willing to stand with me was Mark Walker. He's a fighter. God's going to take him to the top, and I'm going to support him in any small way that I can. And I even texted him the next day. I said, look, are you okay? Just to be courtesy in this arena, I don't want to catch anybody catch any flag. I texted him and said, are you okay to if I share this? And his response was, share the heck out of it. And then a couple weeks later, that's when the big boys come in and say, okay, here's how we're going to roll this thing in North Carolina, and everybody needs to line up. And I just wouldn't, I'm trying to sound obstinate just for purpose. I didn't line up. I didn't say, no, I'm not going to do that, because I've never, in looking back in my 6 or 7 years of the political arena, I can look people in the eye and know them that I've always told them the truth. We had 200 pastors this past Tuesday come out and endorse us across the state. We hope that we're going to finish strong and close the gap. But whatever happens, I'm at peace with knowing how we not only run a race, but how we lead our life in this environment or any other.
What's the party look like on May 18th? I mean, obviously, the reason why we have elections and not coronations is we never really know what's going to happen. And we've seen so many times where the polls said one thing and, you know, the results end up saying something completely different. You're actually a product of that when you ran for the 6th congressional district. A lot of people didn't think you had a chance of getting there, but you did, you know. So what does the party look like once this primary race is over?
Well, the party, you know, especially when you've had this many nasty ads attacking both myself and the former governor, it takes a while for those things to mend, not just the candidates. I mean, I'm going to support who the party represents because I believe the ideals. But for people who have supported and I've got one ad running that calling me no-show Walker when I actually have a 97% voting attendance record, there was a 10-day time where I was quarantined. It was mandatory. They took those numbers and tried to create something with it. The people that are working hard day and night, that are sacrificially financially supporting you, or the resources, putting out signs, they get really upset by that. And I can understand that when you're saying something that's kind of half truth or misrepresentation. But as far as what it looks like, I hope it's able to come together. Look, North Carolina is a purple state. There's a reason, I believe, if you look at the numbers, Sherry Beasley polls the lowest amount against me than any other candidate that's running. In fact, I don't know if you saw that just breaking this morning, the Charlotte Observer has announced that they're endorsing me. I don't know whether that's helpful or hurtful in a Republican primary, but I love what they said. This is the line I'll get to you here. It says, we have some deep concerns with Walker's position, but we do believe he is principled and focused on real problems. His history of political independence should bring comfort to Republicans in this primary. And if you're looking for somebody who is a rock solid conservative, but also is concerned about building bridges to share the message, not just like, look, the last time that John Lewis walked across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, I was one of two Republicans that were able to be invited that ended back up at Martin Luther King Jr.'s Dexter Avenue King Baptist Church. I was the only Republican to win the United Negro College President's Award. I invited 101 chancellors to Washington, D.C. from historical Black colleges and universities. I was told they would never show. 87 of them did. Those are things outside even the legislative arena that I think are part of hopefully a giftedness or a genuine heart for all of our communities to experience this American dream. And to be able to have that message squashed by these DC dark money groups has been frustrating, because even the numbers will tell you that the top end number that Sherry Beasley, the candidate, would get against us is 42%. But how our struggle and our continue to work with what we've got to do the next 2 weeks is get that message out and try to push through. We're not the most prolific fundraiser. We've raised about $1.9 million, and going against nearly $20 million has been challenging of that, because it is an uphill. But look, I'm not deterred. We're going to continue to fight to finish.
You know, I've seen plenty of times. I mean, I've been a part of different campaigns. I've watched campaigns all the time. I study campaigns. And, you know, these campaigns where all this money comes out of nowhere, it does allow for a candidate to get the message out, but oftentimes doesn't allow for the right message to come out. It oftentimes might even be attacks like what we're seeing right now against you, and certainly a lot of attacks against former Governor McCrory. And to the degree now where I'm even starting to hear a lot of Republicans within the party sort of turn their nose up at this constant attacking that we're seeing after you and again after Governor McCrory, because I do think it's causing a bit of a fracture in the party. But the other thing I think it causes, and everybody that knows me, I mean, if you lock in with me week after week, you know, I like to have conversation about ideas. I like to see action. I want to see solutions. I mean, I'm just that kind of pragmatic, common sense kind of person. But when you've got all this money flooding in, it's almost like you don't have a discussion about any real ideas. You don't have any discussion about any real policies. I mean, right now we have a housing crisis in North Carolina, despite the fact that we've got all these big economic development announcements. Where are these people going to live? We have a real issue here. We got a big issue with inflationary pressure all across not just our state, but the whole country. But that's not the debate that we're having. You know, those aren't the conversations that we're having. And I'll ask you the question I asked former Governor McCrory. I mean, have we just gotten to a point that we some kind of way got to get all this money out of politics? I mean, it just seems to be really distracting from us having a real conversation.
I think so, Algernon. And the problem is how do you do it? I've looked at this as well. I think outside money ought to be limited in some way. That if you want to raise money, I've got no worries or concerns about that. But let's have at least where, heck, 50%, 75%, whatever the number we could sliding scale, that it needs to come from North Carolinians. And that should be true for Republicans or Democrats, because if you have the greater percentage, tens, by the time you get the general election, hundreds of millions of dollars that is coming from either D.C., as it is in this primary, New York or California for the Democrats, to be able to literally game the system in selecting who the primary, or in this case, maybe even the general election candidate is, I think most people would have a problem with that. But because these pockets are so deep at times, and these deals are made sometimes 2 or 3 years in advance, I think it's very difficult. But I would vote for something immediately that would limit the outside influence from dark money, or from just in general of having a certain percentage where you have to have at least half. I think that's a fair compromise, in my opinion. every time that you raise a few more bucks from North Carolinians, then you can raise a few more bucks from outside North Carolina.
Yeah, I'm all for freedom of speech. And I know a lot of the big donors and, you know, the PACs and all those folks will say, hey, this is about freedom of speech. And I agree. I'm all for freedom of speech. I mean, you should be able to say and express yourselves the way you need to. But when it comes to these campaigns where we're electing people who are going to make really important decisions about public policy that's going to impact, you know, literally millions and millions of people. At some point, we got to have a debate about real policy, and it can't just be all about attack, and flooding your mailbox with postcards and doing those kind of things. I mean, you just can't run a campaign from a basement. I mean, you've got to come out here and talk to people and meet them and get to know them. You know, with that said, I mean, you've been all over North Carolina. I mean, you've talked to everybody from the shopkeeper to farmers to everybody. I mean, what's the number one issue that they say is happening across North Carolina? What issue does North Carolinians want you to fix if you make it to Washington it back to Washington?
Sure. We touched on the one earlier that's just kind of daily impacting people, inflation. If you were to put that on pause or on the shelf for just a second, consistently there's three issues that people are concerned about. One is China continue to have some kind of infiltration. You know, China now cyber attacks is 15 to 20,000 times per day. Their military buildup in the South China Sea, 85 warships. A lot of the infringement on our copyright material has been to the place where it's really become a detriment to our economic aspect, the trade deals. So China's in there. Number two is border security. If you go back just 2 years ago, the number one killer among males in this country, ages 18 to 45, was fentanyl. What's changed in the last 2 years? You've been able to increase those ages. Now it's 13 to 50. Mm. And enough fentanyl has been seized at the border to kill every American five times over. That's what we've seized. The other problem I have with this administration when it comes to border, Algernon, is as the former ranking member on Intelligence and Counterterrorism Subcommittee on our Homeland Security Committee, I've seen the intel of what happens to these migrant children that are trying to come across the border, because the drug cartels, there's no government influence at the border. Drug cartels control all of it. You want to come to this country, you work with the drug cartels. And for this administration to give them the green light and knowing what's happening without getting too graphic and subvert some of the trafficking trades. And then the third thing, it's education. The amount of ideology that's being implemented into our children's mindset, without getting the fundamentals of writing, reading, and arithmetic, but all of this social education right now. Look, teach our history, teach it well, teach it that there were times that America didn't get it right. I'm not afraid to say that as a conservative. Day one, when we said all men are created equal, we didn't live out those principles. But the great thing about America is that we never quit trying until we became the land of opportunity for every American. Teach both. I get it. But don't teach our child that just because we have differences, whether it's skin tone or other things, that I have an indoctrinated hatred for my brother. And that's a problem, and we've got to fix it.
Now, I totally understand. You know, Congressman, you heard me mention, I mean, early voting has already started. Primary day is May 17th. So we're in what we call the 11th hour of this campaign. You've been out there for a long time. I'm sure you're ready for a break, no matter how you look at it. I'm sure you're ready to enjoy your wife and maybe have a good summer. What do you want my audience? What do you want voters to know in this closing hour? I mean, what do you want them to know about you? What do you want them to know about your campaign?
I'm authentic. I will look you in the eye and I will tell you the truth. And I care about where you are. And my record proves that I'm not one dimensional. I don't run from being a conservative. I'm the highest rated America First candidate. But our ability to build inroads and to build relationships, not based in politics, but based in the genuine needs of our communities, is something that I have a record. And if I have the opportunity or blessed by the people of North Carolina, we're going to continue to build that in the United States Senate. And if something happens that we don't survive, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go out there and I'm going to keep meeting the needs in the community, whatever capacity that I can serve.
That I do not doubt at all. And to my audience, I do think he's speaking from the heart. This is former Congressman Walker, also seeking your vote to become the next United States Senator from North Carolina. Early voting has started. I would encourage you to go out and learn more about Congressman Walker. You go to his website, follow him on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. He is very, very active. He's always showing behind the scenes clips of what's happening out on the campaign trail. There are several debates out there that Congressman Walker and former Governor McCrory have appeared in. You can go find some of those on YouTube. I actually caught the one on Carolina Journal. I thought that one's a very good one, as well as I think the Spectrum one, if I'm not mistaken. I know there's been several of them that you guys have had. But I'd encourage my audience to go out and try to learn more about Congressman Walker. Congressman, I know that you're you know, being the underdog is no new position for you. And I have seen you fight through a lot of tough battles. I don't deny or don't doubt that you won't continue to fight no matter what happens on May 17th. So you're always welcome to come back here and lock in with us. And to my audience, make sure you always stay tuned to WTOB, because that is where Locked In broadcasts every Sunday morning at 7:30 a.m. But if you happen to miss it there, you can always go to Apple, Spotify, Pandora, wherever you like to download your favorite podcast. You can lock in with me there. You can also follow us on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. And until next time, y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WCG. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. The views and opinions in this podcast are solely those of the contributors and are not necessarily those of our distributors or hosting company. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.